Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me, as always, is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight, if you find that tonight's poetry is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have one to two shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex.
Hey, what's doing?
Oh, not much. Just looking forward to hanging out with you, maybe another cool poet or two. You know, delving into the poetry and, you know, just having a good old time. How about you? What you doing?
Oh, not much.
Same old, huh?
Yep, resting my soul bones.
Ah, yes. I get that. Sure. For sure. Well, I'm going to go ahead and I'll bring our guest on, Lawrence. So I'd like to say welcome, Lawrence. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Good, Pam. Good. How are you? And hello, Rex.
What's doing?
Well, we're going to find out, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Well, you know what? I am doing great. You know, I'm actually very excited for tonight's topic. We got quantity and quality. We got 18 rights, which isn't, or 19. 19 or 18, something like that. But anyways, isn't it
19
now? What's that?
19 now.
19, there you go, 19 now. So that's just the end. You know what? I just happened to stumble, and of course, I'm sure there's plenty of people who, you know all about arts and specific movements. But oftentimes for me, as I've stated before, I accidentally stumble across my prompts. And I happen to stumble across what's called the lowbrow art movement, which has its influences in pop art surrealism. It was it started in the United States in 1979, and it's going even until the present day. Its influence often started with comic book and what else? Oh, man. I mean, it's just really a fascinating art movement that started being an underground art movement. They were featured at first in a gallery in Greenwich Village. So let's see here. I'm trying to find.
I'll tell you what,
Pam.
A lot of the stuff that I saw began to remind me. A lot of the stuff you put up that I saw began to remind me of the underground comics of the 60s and the 70s, the R. Crumb stuff and other artists. I wish I could remember their names. Some of them were grotesque. Some of them were highly sexual, but they were all lowbrow art.
Well, yeah, and exactly. And that is part of where they actually came from. Like, I don't know if the exact name, but, you know, comic strip artwork. Where was it? Let's see. Where was is that? I wish I could find it exactly. But you're pretty much right on spot there, is that one of their major influences was the comic book artwork of the 1960s. And also, there's a lot of influences as far as, like, as you see influences of, like, tiki, like T-I-K-I. You see influences of, oftentimes it has a sense of humor to it that's sarcastic.
Me? They went after everything. They savaged everything.
Oh, yes. Yes. For sure. And, unfortunately, I can't find exactly what it was that I wanted to read. But, you know, you get the basic idea by looking at the art, where a lot of the influence came from. And, yes, you're right. There's definitely that influence from the comic strips that were at times both disgusting in the horror aspects of it. And sexual in its almost like, you know, that pop art sexuality. So.
And I'll tell you what else. A lot of these artists didn't pay attention to conventional art rules because they didn't have conventional art skills, but they still came out with interesting stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. You're right about that. They really didn't worry about those conventional rules as far as art goes. And they mixed different mediums together. You know, you can see a lot of, with the artwork, you can see a lot of pre-existing cartoons, like a lot of the old cartoons. You can see those mixed in, you know, or like one of the examples I think is a good one of what you were talking about with the horror aspect is that there's prop number 3 in the contest by Gary Panter is a zombie smoking, and it says, like, buy or die. But how about you, Rex? You're awfully quiet there. I didn't mean to just talk over you, but do you have any thoughts?
I'm just listening.
Oh, okay.
Well, lowbrow is a bit of kind of a different perspective because it looks pretty surreal to a point, some of the stuff. And it does, the interjection of the oddball into the art kind of adds a different, all right, where was he trying to go with this stuff?
Yes.
Pam,
exactly.
I think I found that thing that you said you wanted to read. I got to quote it very briefly. Lowbrow or lowbrow art is an underground visual art movement that arose in the Los Angeles, California area in the late 1960s. It is a populist art movement with its cultural roots in underground comics, punk music, tiki culture, graffiti, and hot rod cultures of the street.
Yes, that's exactly what I wanted to find. Thank you, Lawrence. Thank you. And Rex, you are right that there definitely is a surrealism aspect to the artwork that is really cool. So, but I think we've discussed the artwork enough. I am excited to get on with the poetry. So, Rex, what do you have for us first?
New School Tattoo by After the Fire. Well, come on down. Well, come on down and get some ink. The price is cheaper than you think. We'll have you tatted in a wink here at New School Tattoo. We'll tattoo any body part and turn you into walking art. We're right next to the new Walmart. Check it out, New School Tattoo. Feel free to bring your own design. No credit card? Well, cash is fine. We're down on Main. Look for the sign. We are New School Tattoo. No better tattoos anywhere. Our work is great. The price is fair. You'll even have some cash to spare. Check out New School Tattoo. End part. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what an awesome write by Dave. Very cool. And you're the one that read. Lawrence. See, I get all confused when I have two just sexy-sounding guys on the show with me. I can't remember who's who. So that's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. And, Lauren, your thoughts?
Well, it has the flavor of the art it's using as a prompt. It's simplistic on purpose. It almost sounds like a walking sandwich ad for the New School Tattoo store. I do like it.
Me too. And you said exactly what I was thinking earlier today as I was reading this poem, and that it does have the flavor of the artwork that it's representing. Very cool. And Rex, you did an awesome read of that. Your thoughts?
I'll go along with what Laurent just said, but that second stanza, we'll tattoo any body part and turn you into walking art. We're right next to the new Walmart. Check out New School Tattoo. But that first line, we'll tattoo any part, body part. It reminds me of a piece I had seen. It was of this, it was a large piece. It had wild, fiery hair all over the place. A face, two really big, bulging, bloodshot eyes, a hell of a grin, with the tongue hanging out, but it was done on this guy's belly, right below the navel, and his tongue, which was forked, ran down his penis. So anytime a girl was busy with him, he got to stare into those big old bloodshot, blaring eyes and that wild hair. Oh, yeah, this is what it's all about.
Holy moly, that would have been an awesome tattoo to see. Wow.
So when the doctor says stick out your tongue, there's an issue, right?
Yep.
my goodness. Yeah, I could totally see that. Yeah, you know what? I have to agree with both of you. It definitely fits the vibe of the artwork. I like that, you know, he did put in his AN, poem is a commercial jingle, and I thought that was, and you could catch that even without it, but I like when people put things in their AN. I like the rhyme and flow of this, how it has, you know, that commercial jingle vibe, which, and as you said, Lauren, it's simple just for the you know, on purpose, you know, to work well, because the artwork, it's thought-provoking, but it's thought-provoking in its simplicity. And I thought a commercial jingle was a perfect choice for this kind of poem, for this kind of artwork, because oftentimes there was this kind of idea of the commercialism of society that comes through in the artwork. And I really like, we'll tattoo any body part and turn you into walking art. We're right next to the new Walmart. Check out our new school tattoo. Because, of course, you could just imagine all the Walmartians going to get their new school tattoo.
here's a phrase that probably applies to you, Frank Zappa. We're only in it for the money.
There you go. There you go. I can totally see Frank Zappa liking this artwork and this poem, for sure. But awesome, Rusty. I'm glad you are inspired. Thank you very much. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Joyce by Time Teller. That one's yours.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. Efficiency evolves into a god whose hypnotic mind control grooms from the womb until death. Buy two, get one free, bog off to be efficient. Yet you only get one life. The doctors and technology are working on that. At the till, they have buttons. One speeds up your pacemaker, making you speed up and down the aisle, buying more, getting home quicker, and so returning for more sooner. Electricity is more efficient, but three times the price of gas, and so the true efficiency is to speed off bankruptcy. They bully and gang up, forcing their views, using anything you have said to justify their need to groom you. You are chosen with potential, and they efficiently remove it until you become economically compliant or just compliant. And then they offer their great consumer rewards, yet you don't see it as rewards or anything you now want. Because in order to get you to buy what was down aisle 10, they close all of their aisles or split wet substances. Why would you buy from aisle 10 when your buying habits have been tainted by the efficiency of hypnotic groomers? End poem. And Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this.
It hits on the thought of grooming, which is another way of looking at how you're leveled into certain aspects with the work they offer, the commercials, the idea of this product over another product, and how you always see it. So it's kind of a forefront, and they've even got it now to carry around these little pocket computers called telephones these days. And if you're caught thinking or talking about something, all of a sudden, that item starts to pop up in your phone all of a sudden as that thing pushing you onwards, marching you down that road. It is about taking your money any way and every way they can, and that sort of steering you down a particular aisle that you don't want to go down to is that idea of there is a matter of control, and how they do it is very sneaky. Whether it's from taking information, then stamping it through you, or it's uploading information through your eyes. So your brain is always in contact with that which they want to sell you. And it might not be that one particular item, but it doesn't matter. As long as it comes within the venue of them themselves, that brand name, and they get you either way, which is pretty clever.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. I mean, shoot, if I look up something on Amazon and then I go on Facebook, all of a sudden there it is on Facebook saying, you know, buy more of this, or, you know, you want to go back and buy this. But yeah, I mean, commercials have, advertising has used subliminal messaging, you know, like even before, way before the internet. I mean, I remember back when I was in high school taking a class on advertising. Well, I think it was a part of a class, like it was a speech class, and then one of the segments was advertising, and it did talk about subliminal messaging. And but now with the internet, it's like three times as bad because, you know, they keep track of what you buy, what you even just look at. And so there is that idea, as you were mentioning, Rex, of how they groom your mind to buy what they want you to buy. So great observation. And Lauren, your thoughts.
You know, you could spend half an hour talking about this particular subject.
Oh, my goodness, right?
Until you become economically compliant, I think that's part of a line, really, really says it. Right now in Congress, there are legislators who are trying to pass laws to ban targeted advertising to children. It's a big issue. Some of these prepubescent consumers have YouTube channels. Some of these YouTube channels, and they demonstrate the latest product of the day and how much they enjoy it, et cetera, have billions with a B views, which is absolutely stunning. It just goes to show you how efficient the system is. And that's exactly what this poem says right off the bat. Efficiency evolves into a god. You know, we used to be hunter-gatherers as a society. Now we're hunter-buyers. And should the wave of buying cease, our society collapses.
How nice.
Amen to that. And, yeah, and, of course, why the reason they target children is because they know the children are going to get their parents.
Mom. Can I have this? Can I have that?
but I did like this one. I like how it does get on a subject that I think is really needs to be addressed, and the idea of how people want to control and manipulate and, you know, even small details like, you know, putting certain items right up next to the cash register or self-checkout, you know, although I personally do not find self-checkout efficient, but I know there are people who do. I'm always that person that as soon as I push, you know, I can't make it through self-checkout without the lights and the noise makers going off and the signs pointing down saying, this idiot needs help. That's me at self-checkout. But I really like how this kind of, that has that whole feel of being manipulated by a system. And I particularly like, you are chosen with potential and they efficiently remove it until you become economically compliant or just compliant, and then they offer their great consumer rewards, yet you don't see it as rewards or anything you now want, because in order to get you to buy what was down aisle 10, they close all their aisles or split wet substances. I think that was actually supposed to be spilled wet substances. I get that feeling, but In other words, they find ways to distract you from what you are focused on. But great right time teller, very well done. And all right, what do we got next, Rex?
Locked Away by Poetic Creations. And Laurent, this one's to you.
Thank you, Rex. Locked Away. I would have thought one would have to be dead for their worms arriving in their head. But they are there. Now I feel this wiggling, squiggling, jingling, prickling, burning, sickening, sickening. Behind locked doors, I've never had keys to a lock. Or blood is mocking my shock. Electroconvulsive therapy treatment a possibility. There comes knocking, more unpredictability. Even the walls laugh, it's insanity becoming meek. They laugh until tears accumulate to form a sea. And I drown to the sound of their effervescence. I drown to this bubbling, cheering fluorescence. End poem.
Great read there, Lawrence, and an excellent write by Poetic Creations. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's a double bite. Locked Away, there's the angle of this being some kind of insane asylum. I love that first stanza. I love those last couple lines. But they are there. I feel this wiggling, squiggling, tingling, prickling, burning, sickening, thickening. The idea of the mind hardening up with what's going on. And then the thought with a electroconvulsive shock therapy and fear comes knocking with more unpredictability. But then that last one drops in the madness of actual shopping, buying or dying. And I drown to the sound of their effervescence. I drown to this bubbling, shearing fluorescence. The idea of the lighting being part of the equation that drives the worms screaming in your brain, thereby pushing me over the edge.
I like that. I like that. Those are some great observations there. And, yeah, it does have that, as you said, that feel of being in the insane asylum, you know, especially with the mention of electroconvulsive therapy. And then the mention of the fluorescence. I drowned in this bubbling, cheering fluorescence. It makes you think of the fluorescent lights that you find at the hospital, but also of the fluorescent lights that you would find, you know, like while shopping. So very cool. Very cool. And I know he wrote to prompt 4 and 5, which, by the way, for this artwork, there was a variety of artists that were written to. So he did one by Gary Panter and one by Kenny Scharf. Very cool. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
Let's not forget the fluorescence of the TV tube. Not that they really exist anymore. Same difference. I get the feeling, as you guys did, of someone in an insane asylum. I'm not quite sure how he got there, because he may have been normal when he got there. Because I would have thought, well, they have to be dead before they worms arriving in their head. Then he describes the worms and the fact that he's behind locked doors. The electroconvulsive therapy treatment is interesting. That could almost be characterized as laughter. Not sure. And then we move into the end where he begins to laugh and his tears are everywhere and bubbling like champagne, and it drowns in them. Drowning in your tears is an old saying. Very clever, right? I liked it.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, I liked it too. I like the visceral imagery. I like that he leaves a lot of space for the reader's imagination. Like, you can pick up that this is somebody who has gone insane, that is locked away in an insane asylum, and yet you don't know really necessarily what brought them there. You just know that you're there in the moment with them. And you can kind of guess by the artwork chosen and, you know, some of the imagery, especially to me, the fluorescent light at the end. that, you know, maybe it wasn't, as Rex was mentioning, the idea of being overwhelmed by the whole shopping experience and being pressured, you know, the pressures of society. And I really like the, like I said, the visceral imagery in this, but the part that stands out to me the most is behind locked doors, I've never had keys to unlock. On the chalkboard, blood is mocking my shock. Electric convulsive therapy treatment, a possibility. Fear comes knocking with more unpredictability. And I think, isn't that what we oftentimes, what fear is it's not knowing, it's not having a certainty of the outcome of life or of our life choices. So, excellent write and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Just Another Day by Scott Sharp. You got SoundCloud.
Do. All right. And here we go.
Just Another Day. Inside of the inside of my layered clown suits, walking the skeletal remains of my half-dead rabbit this morning, who recently grew antlers when she saw the baby doll taxidermist who rides her around now, like a show pony at the racetrack down the street. I pause to spin the globe, landing on my lawnmower man right foot, mowing down her majesty's thatch of bristle where the daffodils used to grow. Girls cling to me like weeds to the cliffside cracks in my personality, probably because of my tiki socks or possibly that Bob's Big Boy statue I stole months ago. They always like them large. Nonetheless, certainly they were attractive to me, like the creepy insomniatic little boy in his death doll printed on my man's skirt, who, like me, stare into oblivion.
Great read and write there, Scott. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then you get to hear, we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And I really like how, and Scott wrote to prompt number 7, and I really like that he put, what can one write but nonsense to an entirely nonsensical painting? I like that, and I think this was a great, fun write filled with a lot of the nonsense of life. I have to say that I did, as a young child, and even an older child, think a jackalope was a real animal. but was disappointed to find out that they were not, but I love that he brings that in there. Walking the skeletal remains of my half-dead rabbit this morning, who recently grew antlers when she saw the baby doll taxidermist. We have a guy here in town that does taxidermy, and of course, mostly it's people who get the trophy bucks or the big bear that go there. But he even has people come in that want squirrels taxidermied. I just can't imagine. You know, you just really can't imagine. But lots of great reference here, like the Bob's Big Boy statue. Now, that's something that you don't hear a lot about. But I really feel like that despite, you know, being mainly a nonsensical poem, there's this idea in that one stanza of how people are often attracted to broken people in the hopes of being able to polish them up and fix them. Girls cling to me like weeds onto the cliffside cracks in my personality, probably because of my tiki socks, or possibly that Bob's big boy statue I stole months ago. Oh, man, yep. It's just crazy the things attraction will do. But, yes, a fun poem and very well done. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is very interesting, very clever in the write and in the delivery. The prompt 7, what can one write but nonsense, an entirely nonsensical painting, does fit. The fantasy nonsense that he sees is translates to just another day. Because the things that happen in the day are not necessarily nonsense. The layered clown suits is a nice aside to the personalities and the masks we wear sometimes, I think. Yeah, I too saw a jackalope when I was a kid in a pawn shop, I think, in New York City. And, wow, I can't imagine how those two animals managed to connect, shall we say. When he says, I pause to spin the globe, landing on my lawnmower man right foot, mowing down Her Majesty's thatch of bristle, one of the coins, one of England's coins, has on the reverse a thatch of bristle, I believe. I forget the exact term for it, but I just thought that was a reference, an interesting reference. In the middle of the nonsense, you got this little thing that makes all kinds of sense. Very nice poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I gravitated to that one too, but for very, very different reason. The Lawnmower Man was a movie based on a Stephen King short story about marrying a mentality and virtual reality, and then birthing up a kind of a murderous person within that realm that then puts himself on the outside realm. So everything here kind of fits within that notation of virtual reality, the things you find in there, walking the skeletal remains of my half dead rabbit this morning who recently grew antlers. So you got that angle. Then you got the thought of mowing somebody down, that thatch of bristle where the daffodils used to grow. And you got the big boy statue stolen months ago, but then again, it's placed within this realm. So everything makes makes sense because you're walking around a very real yet wholly supremely unreal atmosphere, which in and of itself can actually do some serious damage mentality.
You know what? I'm really glad you brought that part up because I had actually thought about it earlier. Like when, you know, I thought about the movie The Lawnmower Man, but then I got so distracted by the thoughts of the jackalope that I'm glad you reconnected it to my mind. And you're right. By bringing in that lawnmower man, that reference to that movie about that virtual reality, it causes the nonsense that surrounds it to make a bit more sense. So very cool. Very cool. Great observation. All right. So what do we have next?
One Tree Hill by Silent Tree. Perching nests on One Tree Hill, magpie hymns and neon nights. A breath of wind, my life stood still, the shooting stars and satellites. A circus carousel into my abyss, elephant hydra danced into the light. Americana by design, when I wish that I could sleep. I am living like a tin can spaceman, having all but forgot the navigation. Radio waves check, cutting through, I pack my bags, so come and take me home. Inside corporate cartoon reveries, tattooed bones of carbon effigies, pushing banknote turnstile silhouettes, my sewn flesh an art to the machinery. So I stumble day to day within newspaper puppet symmetry, a propaganda by design. Close your eyes and you shall see. ravaged planets as a silicone caveman, sticky fingers in landfill constellations, telescopic balloon pupils watching you. Son, she said, pack your things, and I will take you home. End poem.
Great read, Rex, and thank you, Silent Tree, for this awesome write. I'm so glad you were inspired. And Lauren, your thoughts?
One of those poems, you could take any number of meanings from. It's very abstract, filled with interest in the imagery. A circus carousel into my abyss, elephant hydra danced into the life, Americana by design. I wish that I could sleep. He sounds like someone who has to live in very small spaces, a tin can spaceman, forgetting really how to navigate life. And he's ready to come home. He's ready, Mom, come take me home. And because the corporate cartoon reveries, the tattooed bones of carbon effigies, pushing banknote turnstile silhouettes, I sewn flesh and arched to the machinery. That's the machine of society that can grind us down, causing us to stumble day to day. Very, very effective, clever poem.
Absolutely. And you're right. The surrealism abstract divide that it has really allows for different observations to be made on the poem. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, that opening stanza offers itself up as a singular outside the motif for the rest of the piece itself, because it hits on almost a piece in the moment, the perching mess on One Tree Hill, magpie hymns and neon nights, a breath of wind, my life stood still, like shooting stars and satellites. It's almost a peaceful note, kind of a thought to dreaming, but everything else from then on down walks that very same dream, but in a very different way, because that second stanza, you've got a circus carousel into my abyss, elephant hydra danced into the light, Americana by design, when I wish that I could sleep. So there's that note about being kept awake. And then that sort of the tin can spaceman, the corporate cartoon reveries, and the stumbling day-to-day within newspaper puppet symmetry, propaganda by design, close your eyes and you will see, gives voice to that note of all the imagery we're inundated with day-to-day. And then I like that thought with the silicone caveman, as though we're being made into something else, the sticky fingers and landfill constellations. The idea of what is being brought to the thought of mass consumeration, and that thought of pack your bags and I will take you home to finish out is, hey, come on. We'll get you out of here. We'll get you home. And tomorrow you'll be back to do it again, or next week, next month.
Yeah, you're precious.
That I like that. Very cool observation, Art. I'm reading and talking at the same time. Very cool observation, Rex. And yeah, you're right. There is just all this stuff we get inundated by, like just bombarded. And if you take a look at the particular painting that they wrote to, you can see how a lot of the influence in the poem itself, because it's a lot of overwhelming detail and a lot of characters from classic cartoons or classic commercials, like the old-fashioned Mr. Peanut, the Campbell Soup Kid. You know, you look at it and it's this overwhelming garish cartoon monstrosity of commercials from the past and even into the present. And I think they captured that really well. And there's also, on a technical level, this has great rhyme and flow. It has great alliteration, you know, and for some reason, I really feel like with this kind of artwork, rhyme and alliteration just works very well. But inside corporate cartoon reveries, tattooed bones of carbon effigy, pushing banknotes, turnstile silhouette, my sewn flesh and art to the machinery. And it speaks on the idea of how we give up the most valuable part of ourselves in order to fit in with the popular society that it is marketed to us. I also really liked Ravaged Planets of the Silicone Caveman, Sticky Fingers and Landfill Constellations. Like, we no longer see the real beauty that's out there. Instead, the idea of finding the sky being covered by smog, the land being covered by the landfill constellations. The only sparkle you see is the neon light sparkling off the tossed aluminum cans. And so it's just a wonderful write on the idea of consumerism and the greedy nature of mankind caught up in the need to buy and sell. And, so excellent write and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Exit Sanity by Guilty. That's for all yours, Laurent.
All right. I feel that way sometimes. Turn right, blinkers on, follow the dotted line. Ignore the stop signal. You are doing fine. Don't let the view distract you from where we are headed, doing double time. Funny little piglets, flashing red lights. Blink, blink, bacon, wonderful and fried. Eggs over easy, tails on fire. Why, we love a little nonsense, keeping from our minds. Where were we? Heading for dinner, heading for disaster. Pocket full of smiles, cracked the black window, smoking China white. Off goes the green dragon, rolling up our cigars. Never could have imagined that we drove this far. End poem.
Great read, Lawrence. An excellent write by Guilty. You can tell he had a lot of fun with this one. And
Rick, he didn't get pulled over.
and your thoughts, Rex?
It's all about, I'm going to go with death and that driving force pushing us onward ever to it. Because you hit on the first two stands, they hit on the thought of driving itself. And you've got the idea of bacon, wonderful when fried. And then the idea of... we love our little marks and speaking from our minds, but it's a touch of insanity thrown in. And then we got a disaster, smoking China white. So we got drugs involved, anything and everything that feeds and fuels us to a little earlier death than we might have thought to begin with.
I like that. I like that. Very cool. And Lawrence, you did a wonderful read of it. Your thoughts?
I definitely do not condone driving anything except a stone sober. Let's get that straight. But being a youth, I did indiscretions. One of those foolish things, among them driving high. So when I read, turn right, blinkers on, follow the dotted line, ignore the stop signal, you are doing fine. You do struggle with driving. And that dotted line can be a big help because, you know, well, okay, if I keep that to my left, that's good, but I got to follow it, so I better straddle it, at which point you run into problems. Driving while high, yeah, this reflects all of that. Great feeling.
Oh, yes. Yes. I like all the clever references to it. I like how it's about somebody that you can tell is just not in the right state of mind. And which works really well with this artwork. Like, you get the whole feel of a high-speed chase movie. Don't let the view distract you from where we are headed, doing double time. Eggs over easy, tails on fire, why we love a little nonsense seeping from our minds. Where were we? And, you know, I like how that line, we love a little nonsense seeping from our minds, because we really do. We find nonsense absolutely, I think, entertaining for the most part, because, you know, we don't want to look at nonsense and try to peel away the layers. So, you know, which oftentimes there isn't layers, but sometimes there is. I also like the line about puff goes the green dragon rolling up our cigars. Never could have imagined we drove this far. And, yeah, you could just totally see the idea of being lost one moment and just waking, like going to sleep one moment, but keep moving, and then waking up like hours later trying to figure out how you got there. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we Dragons got next, Rex?
Dragons of Decadence by Betty Page.
Speaking, I kind of figured. Speaking of dragons. All right. Goes like this. Cupid's arrows struck. Slithering snakes crawl up me, taint with decadence. Vivid emerald eyes observe smashing neon light, stripped down to my core. Of love I implore, in adoration I crown. Tie me up in bows, wickedly devour. Consume my deep midnight glow, darken up my soul. Taste me, I'm jet black, corroded adrenaline, fixed by heroin. Chasing dragon's fire, torching up all memories, chokes on sticky smoke. Calm down, calm now feels serene. Shaking, I need another, so I self-destruct. End poem. And as always, just amazing imagery by Betty Page. And Laurent, your thoughts?
This is an impressive piece. If I take it completely literally, Dragons of Decadence are her lovers. Cupid's arrows struck, slithering snakes curl up the taint with decadence. And you have their velvet emerald eyes really stripping you down to your core. Of love I implore, adoration I crown, tie me up in bows. She's waiting to be tied up, to be wickedly devoured. Taste me, I'm jet black, throated adrenaline fixed by heroin. She's also a drug. Chasing dragon's fire is also, I think, a reference to drugs, torching up all memories, jokes on sticky smoke. Now you're high, you feel good. But one more, I'm going apart. It's a literal interpretation in my own fevered imagination.
Yes, for sure. And yes, there was definitely... obviously some chasing of the dragon going on here. That's for sure. And Rex, your thoughts?
I could walk along. I'm going to go with the sort of being introduced, that first stanza. Cupid's arrow struck, slithering snakes crawl up me, taint with decadence. Been introduced in that moment. And then sort of vivid emerald eyes, observing smashing neon lights, stripped down to my core. Now you're feeling the effects. And then that thought of love I implore and adoration I crown, tie me up in bows. I want more. And then from then on down, it just walks in that avenue of being bound hand and foot into that note to the back end. Calm now feels serene. Shaking, I need another. So I self-destruct. The idea of finally being so desolate that they are streamed into the fact that they can't live without it.
Absolutely. You know, that's a really great observation there because, yeah, the beginning does have that whole feel of getting introduced to the drug and becoming addicted to it. You know, I like how she brings in the dark sensuality, which works well with the idea of addiction. Of love I implore and adoration I crown, tie me up in bows, wickedly devour, consume my deep midnight glow, darkening up my soul. And it really does speak on that whole idea of not being able to live without something, of desperately needing it. And I thought this was a particularly dark piece of Betty's, especially in the ending line, calm now, feel serene, shaking, I need another, so I self-destruct. You know, you can just feel the idea, you know, see within that imagery the idea of somebody going through withdrawal symptoms and then going back to the drug because they don't know how to live without it. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
Medics mop up after another grammar skirmish in the park by Emily T. The white-coated doctor assesses the situation. He's calm in the battle's aftermath, seen it all before. Dragon non-sequitur, fouls confused gouts of fire. It was St. George who did it. He's Turkish, you know. Nurse Smith tries to comfort whistling Jabberwocky. She's fading fast. She keeps repeating more guff. These bouts in the park are becoming more frequent. St. George and his army of pedantic fanatics are the new self-appointed vigilantes of grammar. Under their perfectly punctuated battle banners, leading the crusade for proper use of language and eradication of nonsense of every sort. Whimsy and limerick have gone into hiding, no form safe when grammar patrols riding. End quote.
Great read, Rex, and I'm really glad to see that Emily was inspired. Very cool. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I wish I knew the picture that this was written to, but it's a great take on the subject of proper grammar, pulled elastic to the point of breaking and nonsense, but still having meaning, which is very, very nice. And there's nonsense all the way through in this particular piece, but it's nonsense constructed for the sake of humor. These bouts in the park are becoming more frequent. St. George and his army of pedantic fanatics are the new self-appointed vigilantes of grammar. Now, that could be an interesting Monty Python skit, if you think about it. Anyone who can produce the Ministry of Silly Walks can certainly produce the Ministry of Silly Talks. I like this piece.
Oh, me too, and you're right. That section there would make for a great Monty Python skit. And she actually, this was to prompt number one, which was by the artist Robert Williams, and it has like a weird cartoonish garish-looking monster and a dead Jabberwocky and these doctors or whatever coming out of an ambulance. So you can see the connection with the artwork for sure.
Well, yeah, he labels it as an ekphrastic poem. So.
Yeah. I'm thinking that maybe from what I understand from learning from Bobby and Dan is that ekphrastic poetry is poetry that makes observations usually on artwork. So I don't know, maybe this is kind of just like what came, I don't know for sure why it's labeled ekphrastic, but that's all right with me because I don't completely understand ekphrastic, but
just a poem that describes a painting.
Ah,
really,
okay.
No more than that.
Oh, yeah. And I maybe it's a little different when you do ekphrastic for surrealism painting, because oftentimes it's open to interpretation.
Well, no, yeah, you blend whatever you want to with the observations. You're absolutely right.
Very cool, very cool. But yes, I like what you had to say. Awesome. And Rex, your thoughts?
I like the interpretation on the picture itself. It does walk in that notion of making fun of those who think they're so that they have to insert themselves into, this is how it's done, this is how you do it, this is how it works. No other forms are allowed that are offering of pedantic fanatics, self-appointed vigilantes of grabber, perfectly punctuated little banners, leading to safe or proper use of language, when the idea of use of language is it's interpretive. If you can turn it into a metaphor, use it. It doesn't have to be literal up front in your face. That's the idea of using language to begin with. So it's this advice at those people.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I do like how this makes fun of those who are the grammar patrol and said, you know, this is the way it has to be and this is the way it has to be. You know, although I do think, me personally, you know, I if you're not going to follow grammar and spelling rules, it has to make a point. Like, it can't be just because you decided not to go back and fix some bad spelling or some bad grammar. You know, it's got to serve, it's got to be wordplay, it's got to serve a purpose, but that's just me. You know, I mean, we all have our different ways of looking at things. But I love that that Emily brings it, like, this is a nonsense poem, which works really well with a poem that mentions the Jabberwocky. But she brings in familiar characters like the Jabberwocky, like St. George, who fought the dragons, which I thought was really cool. St. George and his army of pedantic fanatics are the new self-appointed vigilantes of grammar under their perfectly punctuated battle banners, leading the crusade for proper use of language and eradication of nonsense of every sort. Whimsy and limerick have gone into hiding. I mean, could you imagine how many just wonderful poems and writings and artwork would just have to go into hiding if nonsense wasn't allowed to coexist with other forms of art? So, yeah, this is definitely a clever write and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we have next?
Doing Dishes by Laurence, and you're up.
Okay. Doing dishes. Am I not ambitious? I think I'll do the dishes. Pop a saucer, a plate or two. A little dance, the old salt stew. Pillows plumped, ashtray dumped. Garbage removed to the curb. Glance at the paper, poke on the vapor. Trim Christmas candles to the proper taper. A day in the life, it's all absurd. Absurd, 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 absurd. Faces swimming around my brain. Leering balloons driving me insane. Gaudy colors with bulging eyes. Filling my technicolor skies. Giant boa in the living room is constricting round my chair. The mermaid in the bathroom is pulling blowfish from her hair. The cuckoo clock has spun its gears. Time's gone crazy. I'm losing years. All while realizing one of my wishes, smoking Thai stick whilst doing the dishes. End poem.
Oh, man, great read and write, Lawrence. I'm glad you decided to write this for the sheer fun of it and the sheer silliness of it and call in to share it with us. Very cool. And Rex, your thoughts?
I got to move down to that. A day in the life, it's all absurd, 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 absurd. Reminds me of, I read the newspaper, news today, oh boy.
Yep, yep. You jumped all over that.
Well, it fits because you got the same thing. They go from he blew his mind out in the car, and then about the holes. They had to count the holes. They didn't know how many there were, but they did anyway. So this kind of walks along that very same theme. But I like the last couple of stanzas where you roll into the abject notion through technicolor skies, pulling blowfish from her hair, and the thought of time's gone crazy, I'm losing years, all while realizing one of my wishes, smoking tie sticks while doing the dishes. I remember tie sticks. Yum, yum, back in the day. Boy, that's going back 50 years.
Yeah. You got that right, my friend.
Oh, my God. That was good. I like that. Bam, you're
Thank
up.
You.
All right. Well, I don't know. You two seem to be having pretty much fun there, remembering your tie sticks and washing dishes. So I didn't want to interrupt too quickly. But, yeah, this was great fun. And while I've never smoked tie sticks or anything else while washing dishes, I will say I really felt like you brought me into the moment. You know, this works so well with tonight's artwork, with just like Dave's poem and so many of the other poems we've had tonight, between, you know, just having fun with imagery and wordplay and the rhyme, and you know, it really works well with tonight's topic. You know, I particularly like the repetition of absurd to drive that home. A day in the life, it's all absurd, 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 absurd. Faces swimming around my brain, leering balloons driving me insane, gaudy colors with bulging eyes filling my technicolor skies. And, of course, you know, all the way through this is great, but this is other stands after that that I really enjoy too. Giant boa in the living room is constricting around my chair. The mermaid in the bathroom is pulling blowfish from her hair. I mean, that is quite the trip there. So very cool, right? And very well done.
Thank you, Sam. For the sheer fun of the silliness of it, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes that's what you got to do. You have to have fun with words. I mean, there's nothing wrong as, you know, I will tell anybody, you know, getting across those important, serious messages. But sometimes you just have to let language exist for the sake of having fun. So.
Yeah.
And, all right, Rex, what do we have next?
The Substitute by Babbler.
Oh, and I suppose that one's mine. Okie dokie,
yep.
Smokey. All right. Lips full and heavy, spreading out across the flaps of her face, toothy and broad, droning about biology with more than distinct district-assigned textbooks, square-cut collar, offering modest 2 inches of décolletage above bulbous, hefty breasts, promising a feast that would one day curl her back down towards her belly like a shrimp tail, but for now obscure answers to a quiz failed miserably in 2 weeks. Were her eyes kind? Memory not saved. Ram occupied by the reedy timbre of her voice stitched into my brainstem, muffled by the cinnamon buns that covered her ears, blunt bangs screaming Russian sex hot, even if her accent mumbles Minnesota. This wasn't her fault. The black ribbon choker brushing against her bobbling voice box as she swallowed, making me swallow, releasing a wave down into my belly, stagnating there, was socially acceptable by dress code, intoxicating images of my fingers creeping under the edge of it, pulling her towards me, creasing into back of her neck, leaving red lines, were entirely on me. Would her breath smell like flowers, coffee, lipstick, would she slap me, be disgusted, didn't matter. None of these fantasies would escape into reality. Self-tried, judged, and found guilty of failing the Bechdel test. Locked away, popcorn ridges of my bedroom ceiling molded into memories of her squared hips, trying to come to terms with myself, fingering the red ink markings of the only test I've ever failed. She taught me a lot about biology, and I do not even recall her name. End poem. And Laurent, your thoughts?
My, oh my, oh my. There's a lot of satire in this particular piece. What young man hasn't sat and kind of fantasized about one of his particular teachers? I look at the image, and I found it really odd, very, very flat, very two-dimensional. But Babbitt does such a great job of characterizing the image and inserting it into the daydreams of a student who was more preoccupied with her 2 inches of décolletage instead of passing the course, perhaps. There are lines in here that are so good. Were her eyes blind, memory not saved, RAM occupied by the reedy timbre of her voice stitched into my brainstem, muffled by the cinnamon buns that covered her ears, blunt bangs screaming, Russian sex pot, even if her accent mumbles Minnesota. It's a satiric humor that it does not seem false to me at all. You can assign almost any attribute to someone that you're thinking about if you want to. It's a great piece. Really, really good.
Yes, absolutely. And there is a great sense of humor to this. And I, too, was drawn to that, you know, Russian sex pot part. And you're right about your observation about the artwork. It has a very two-dimensional flat feel to it. So, yeah, great observation. And Rex, your thoughts?
I would go along with Laurent's thoughts on this about raising hormones with a kid, a boy, in the second to last stanza. The failing the Bechdel test, that note of two women discussing something other than a man, and she failed it. So the idea is, this is walking from a female's perspective, looking at her teacher. So, and the description kind of works that way too, on understanding the thought of how biology works, and even the heaviness of her breasts and everything else, because she hits on that note, curving down toward her belly like a shrimp tail. But for now, obscure answers to a quiz fail miserably in 2 weeks, because she's fantasizing about this teacher and offering up all of that note to it and why she's failing the test. Even though she managed to learn a lot about biology, she still can't remember her name, which is the satirical note on the back end of this.
Yeah, I can, you know, I actually did get the impression myself that this was the idea of a young woman having her first crush on another woman, but I think it works well either way, because either way it is an exploration of young sexuality and discovery and, you know, admiring somebody from afar and wondering what would happen, but knowing that you have to not cross that line. I love the imagery in this. I love the sense of humor. Especially as a blunt bang screaming Russian sex pot, even if her accent mumbles Minnesota. And I like how you can tell she took so much from the artwork itself, and yet she wrote it in such a way that, you know, you can't help but wonder how much of reality that this is based on. I like this all the way through, but especially also popcorn ridges of my bedroom ceiling molded into memories of her squared hips, trying to come to terms with myself, fingering the red ink markings of the only test I've ever failed. And I like that because it was a self-imposed test, and it's interesting. That's an interesting part to me, and I can actually imagine looking up at that popcorn ridges of the bedroom ceiling and wondering if in your youth you made the right decision. Wonderful, right, all the way through, thought-provoking and very well done. And, all right, Rex, what do you got for us next?
My Psychedelic Nightmare by Jenny Hunt, 2017. Disregarded your warning. I picked up that psychedelic mushroom, tasted its earthy flavors of dirt and medicine. This is where the fun begins. My walls start bleeding white. Captured, still art comes to life. Hazy thoughts cloud my mind, hindering reality. Dreams of destruction. Is what I see real or one crazy hallucination? Lost in an alternate reality of subconscious, where thoughts become animation reels. Down we go through the secret portal, entering a new realm, but traumatized by what we see. The pits of hell where they lay decaying. Mechanical serpents swarm from all around. Hiding safe in the entryway, we spot a skeleton alluring the troll, dancing seductively. However, so clumsily, nearly causing another tragic disaster. Can't stop staring, but ready to wake up now. Lights flickering, my head is spinning, awakened by tears running down my face. The high is gone, replaced by disgrace. Finally, back on solid ground, no longer floating away. I'm sober and safe, humbled in bed. End poem.
Great read, Rex, and excellent write by Jenny. I have been really glad to see her writing for so many of our shows and contests lately, that she's been inspired by the various prompts. It does not surprise me that she was inspired by this artwork to write about the idea of someone who goes on a psychedelic mushroom trip. And she really takes us through it, and we're right there with her. Wonderful imagery. I really like my walls start bleeding white. Captured still art comes to life. Hazy thoughts cloud my mind, hindering reality. Dreams of destruction is what I see. Real or one crazy hallucination. And then the pits of hell where they lay decaying, mechanical serpents swarm from all around, hiding safe in the entranceway. We spot a skeleton alluring a troll dancing. And it's such garish and nightmarish imagery throughout that you feel it just seems to get more and more intense until it gets to the end where they find themselves sober and safe and humbled in bed. So excellent take on the prompt, great imagery, and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts? Oh, it says Laurent on YouTube.
I briefly mutated. Sorry. The vividness of a psychedelic trip can be pretty intense, and when married to a nightmare when you're asleep, well, I can't imagine what that must be like. Thankfully, avoided that. But lost in an alternate reality of subconscious, where thoughts become animation reels. That's exactly what's going to happen to you. Your thoughts run like an animation reel over and over and over again, leading God knows where, and you can't really stop it. And then, of course, the images of the pits of hell, the skeleton alluring, troll dancing seductively, however so clumsy, and ready to wake up. You know, you're aware in your sleep, you want to wake up, you do wake up, your head is spinning, the high is gone, replaced by disgrace. And you always feel good when it's over. And that's a nicely told story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And Rex, You did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
It bites on two notions. I've never done mushrooms, but I have tripped plenty out of the 400 plus times. Never had a bad trip. So this does walk in that angle of reality or non-reality, but it also proves to the point on the back end of this, you don't ever do it alone. You do it within company. You've always got to have those extra bodies around, either doing the same thing with you or at least having that one straight person in the room to keep you within the or whether you're out and about, of keeping you guided in the moment, so to speak.
Hey, Rex?
Yes.
Do you remember the movie with Peter Fonda called The Trip?
No, I don't.
Oh, really? Wow. Counterculture movie. It's exactly what you just said. Somebody's going to go on a trip. He's instructed. You're going to have people around you, et cetera. That's why I made the reference. Sorry.
Wait, was that the I remember a movie back in the day. I can't remember the guy's name. But he took a sugar cube out of the refrigerator and he consumed it, but didn't know at the time until later what the sugar cubes were actually doing in the refrigerator, because they were
This wasn't that. It was this whole formal thing about going to San Francisco to go on a trip, LSD trip. It was very formal, lots of rules, suggestions. You know, it was very formalized experience. It was interesting.
Okay.
Lots of psychedelic music and et cetera, et cetera.
Oh.
I once went
to see a movie, Fantasia, tripping. Now that was a while.
That's trippy even without tripping. I can imagine.
Night on Bald Mountain must have freaked you right out.
No, I had a blast. We laughed throughout the whole movie.
Oh, one of those, huh?
Yep. All the colors and all the when you roll a hand in front of your face and you got 50 hands rolling along with it, all of that was wild.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would have been quite the trip. That's for sure. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, with the kind of mind I have, I stay away from that kind of stuff because I can only imagine what kind of demons would come popping out of my head.
Ah, I took driver's ed on acid. That was cool.
Yeah,
Jesus,
Rex,
what?
Oh, my
goodness. You got big ones, my friend, brass ones.
Oh, I had a blast in high school.
I guess.
Yeah, apparently. Lucky you didn't kill anybody taking driver's ed, but it sounds like other than that, you had great fun.
Yes.
But are you sure you were actually driving? Like, maybe you were just hallucinating you were driving.
Oh, no. I was driving.
Okay.
Fatal to the devil. Well, that shows the qualities of a strong mind. You have a strong mind, you control things like that. But if you are weak-minded and subject to all kinds of fears and anxieties, ooh, Lordy.
Yep,
yeah, it could be dangerous.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, what do we have next, Rex?
The Big Top Down Below by Bill Shillen. That one's for Laurent.
Jack and Jill fell to hell, trapped as a circus act. Sometimes a single step can go so far, impossible to turn back. Perform, commanded a ringmaster, only comprised by bones. Jack and Jill agreed to jump through hoops of fire. If Master Bones only allowed them to return home. So let them be, Stephen Reed, screamed Van, wearing a red vest. They're not yet dead. One sleeps in bed. The other has bruised head. Both are sharing the same bad dream. The nightmare was not yet finished. Their light little bodies helped diminish appetite of a snake machine. Like toxic air, children's nightmares can make it difficult to breathe. When in hell, the devil may yell. Still, nothing ever assails worse than a child's scream. End thought.
Great read, Laurent, and an excellent write by Bill. And Rex, your thoughts?
I like the biting of Jack and Jill, hitting on the sort of a children's rhyme. Jack and Jill go up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack came down with half a crown. Jill came down with a daughter. The idea of
I knew you were going to do that. I just knew you were
going to do that. Oh, my God. Yeah, that little Jack and Jill thing plays such a theme within kids. But then again, to have it turn into, as he rolls down the back end of it, into a children's nightmare, and they don't know where it comes from, because the mind at night goes into a mode of trying to figure out something in the day, but it gets twisted into something else, and you get that last thing. Still, nothing ever sounds worse than a child scream in the middle of the night, because that's every parent's worst nightmare. What the hell's going on?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so true. So true. I actually, a couple of my kids, actually, when they were young, went through, what is it called? It's not just nightmares. It's where they wake up, but they don't actually wake up, and they're screaming.
Night terrors.
That's it, yes. A couple of my kids went through night terrors when they were little, and oh, my gosh, that is just scary and frustrating, because there's not much you can do for them. But great comment, Rex. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's ironic you mentioned night terrors. I hadn't thought about those in some time, but two of my four kids had night terrors. And, you know, they're stuck in that in-between, not awake, not asleep, where nothing makes sense. And usually, yeah, they're screaming. And it's almost like a twisted dark circus of the mind. But I like the big top down below as title. It makes a lot of sense. And the dream itself, the characters realizing that they're not dead. One takes in bed, the other has bruised head. Both are sharing the same bad dream. It was nice the way he brought that together, the shared dream. Like toxic air, children's nightmares can make it difficult to breathe. Absolutely. If you can't breathe, you're liable to scream for air. Great.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, another weird thing, like my oldest daughter, actually, when she was about 5 years old, she came downstairs from her bedroom. She walked downstairs, walked over to the kitchen garbage, pulled down her pants, climbed up on top of it, somehow managed to sit on top of the kitchen garbage and pee in it.
Yeah.
And I did not take that child off because I thought, you know what, I was like, by the time I realized what was going on, I'm like, well, I'm not going to pull off a sleeping kid who's peeing in a garbage can, because then they'll be peeing in the floor, on the floor. So, but I just couldn't say, I don't even know how you managed to stay balanced on that garbage can, but somehow she did. I really like this interpretation of the prompt and the bringing in the nightmarish imagery and the frustration of nightmares and the child's scream and the idea of how it almost speaks to me on the idea of how we live in a world where it's so difficult nowadays to feel like we can keep our children safe. And I really like, let them be, set them free, screen man wearing a red fez. They're not yet dead. One's safe in bed. The other has bruised head. Both are sharing the same bad dream. The nightmare was not yet finished. You know, just it almost, it's weird because, you know, it's almost like silly imagery, but at the same time, it's so vividly nightmarish that it can actually, like, when you think about the idea of the nightmares of children and what can cause that, the idea of feeling insecure and feeling like not protected in a dangerous world, it really almost hits hard. So excellent write and very well done. And all right, Rex, what do we have next?
The First Time I Knew That Hair Grew Down There by Mandy 42. That one's yours.
All right. The First Time I Knew That Hair Grew Down There by Mandy 42 was when I peeped under a shower stall in a caravan park. Don't judge me just yet. I was still wearing a Bert and Ernie t-shirt on undeveloped breasts, but wow, her pubis was a miniature chalk poodle, a nest of baby octopi. I ran outside the misty steam house with water behind my ears. Da-dum, da-dum, I was just plain dumb. Her name was Catherine, and she was a resident that chose me as a pet. I was something of a Pokemon. She liked girls, and I saw her kissing one in the park pool. It was a soul kind of feeling. I wondered if I liked girls, too. I did like her fake nails, and I liked the thinness of her fabric, how she held the scent of flowers after rain, the soft way she made vowel sounds. Coo-coo, little dove, coo. But then I found the world atlas with man in hunched stages of evolution, a long, healthy member of civilization hanging between leaf through biology and layers of rock with illustrated eruptions. It was like pre-adolescent porn from a jungle of hard facts, and I kept returning after school with marshmallow slice and melted cheese on crackers. I told Mom I was learning about Greece and arthropods, the usual stuff. And like the sun, it was impossible to look away. I didn't even try. Mystified by the design and curious about the mechanics, I knew then, as certainly as I liked sour sherbet and odd trinkets I could pin on my book bag, I would always prefer an introduction, a brass band to trumpet at the parade, and just a smidgen, let's say, of fanfare and poem. And what an absolutely clever write and great take on the prompt. And Lauren, your thoughts?
Oh, I really wanted to hear Rex's thoughts first on this piece. I'll give it a stab.
Okay.
Again, from a, you know, my mind being very literal, I'll grab onto things and I won't see the meaning of them if they're couched in a particular language. But the first part of this poem, where she peeks under a shower stall in a caravan park, is a child's curiosity, certainly. But curiosity with the wrong person. You know, her name was Catherine. Like girls, and I saw her kissing one in the park pool. It was a soul kind of feeling. And when she says, I wondered if I liked girls too, it's the innocent wondering of a young woman, or a young man for that matter, if it's, the context is different, about their own sexuality. But by using words like the world atlas being hell, but also, yeah, also the world, which is a hell of a book, very fascinating, The Man in the Hunched Stages of Evolution. She gives us this fascinating little stanza, a long, healthy member of civilization hanging between leaf through biology and layers of rock with illustrated eruptions, points out the discovery of the biology of sex, perhaps, and what is normal for a girl, by normal, right? What is normal for a girl or normal for a boy? And she kept returning to school after school to go to the library to look at the World Atlas. And I'm not sure I don't get the marshmallow slice or the milk and cheese, but it's a fascinating piece. Mystified by the design and curious about the mechanics, I do. Nicely done.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is a fascinating piece. And I think it does speak on the discovery of one's own sexuality and how oftentimes we go to the most unusual sources. I remember being a young girl and with my best friend checking out the book, The Joy of Sex, from the library.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I think we don't think we were any more than like 11, and thinking we were just so awesome that we made it out of the library with the joy of sex in our arms.
Not our bodies ourselves, huh?
Yeah, right. But great comment, Lauren. And Rex, what did you think of this nest of baby octopi?
Coming of age. Well, coming of age, because there is that note to curiosity to start with. Her pubis was a miniature chalk poodle, a nest of baby octopi. I ran outside the misty steam house with water behind my ears, kind of a wet behind the ears notion in the moment. And then that sort of her name was Catherine. She was a resident that chose me as a pet. I was something of a Pokemon. She liked girls. I wondered if I liked girls too. And she goes on the scripted notion of the thinness of her fabric. She held the scent of flowers after the rain, the soft way she made vowel sounds. And then walking in, but then I found the World Atlas. The descriptions of this too, long, healthy member of civilization, hanging between leaf through biology and layers of rock with illustrated eruptions. Again, great thoughts to metaphors. And then pre-adolescent porn, again, jungle hard facts, kept returning after school. I like the next two, with marshmallow slice and melted cheese on crackers. There's a kind of a little bit of innuendo with that. Marshmallow slice, God, there's something creamy in that notion, and melted cheese on crackers offers up the idea of nibbling in the moment at all that's coming her way. And then the thought of lying to a mother, then curious about the mechanics. So she's already decided. It's just now it's gone another way. But the back end of this, I would always prefer an introduction, a brass band, a trumpet at the parade, just a smidgen, let's say, of fanfare. So that hits on the angle of the curious notion of finding out instead of having it all laid bare.
Absolutely.
God bless National Geographic.
Yep.
Oh, yes. Yep, National Geographic was always good for, getting that little smidgen of fanfare and more. But, I like, Rex, how you mentioned how this is about that childhood curiosity. And, yes, definitely. And I do like her metaphor and illusion and, you know, how she says things through imagery. And yet the great thing about this poem is it's a wonderful combination of that illusion, metaphor, and imagery and saying things in that very straightforward way that I think many of us can relate to, that idea of curiosity. And, you know, I really related to this one. I'm probably telling too many little short, quippy stories about my childhood, but I can't help it because I really related to this one. One of my youngest aunt, who's only like 11 years older than me, one of her favorite stories that she used to tell, and I don't remember this because I was only like about 3 or so, but apparently, I went over to her house, happened to see her naked, went home and told my mother in this most excited voice that Aunt so-and-so, I will spare her using her name on the show, had more hair between her legs than my mother did, and my mother needed to start trying to grow some because she was behind. But, I like... I really like this. I like how it's relatable. I like how it has a great sense of humor. Even the description of the pubic hair. Her pubis was a miniature chalk poodle, a nest of baby octopi. I ran outside the misty steam house with water behind my ears. Da-dum, da-dum. I was just plain dumb. And I like how, as Rex was saying, it touches on that childhood curiosity and then that self-discovery of where your own sexuality lies. So excellent write and very well done. All right, Rex, what do you have for us next?
About Face by Julie Buck. About Face. You mugs wear your hearts on your sleeves, and where the fuck are your necks? My wisdom's ripe and mature, but with no necks, what do I do with my ligature? Allah Greenhead, you slow, so shut your ignorant pie hole. Next, Mr. Pink, with a face disgruntled, life must stink. Hey, Mr. Red, a complexion of heat and of burn, your crooked, collapsed lip can't even discern. Poor toasted bastard, was Florida worth it? Oh, hello, yellow and your cowardly fat fear. What shame in having a white streak running down your back, you jaundiced, pathetic pussy. Orange man, be angry all you want. You've missed every boat and falling star, so close that mouth and be the rage that you are. What you say, Sir Gray? Shocked and surprised? Try as you might, even your own shit, no one denies. Lastly, Master Green, cool as a cucumber, tight-lipped, in control. Perhaps facing things neutrally is a good way to roll. Though, so, I'd buy the warranty. End poem.
Great read, Rex. Oh, man, you did an awesome read of that with all the different voices that come through. And just a wonderful, fun write by Julie. And... oh, and by the way, Rex, I did send you a message. And, Laurent, your thoughts.
I looked at this image initially and thought and dismissed it almost immediately. I really wasn't sure what I was looking at. It was fingers or cigarettes, ends perhaps in a pocket. But very cleverly, Julie Buck managed to put together something very interesting. I like the use of the vulgar language. It absolutely fits this particular piece. I'm not vulgar, but you know what I mean. And it's very well written, too. Hey, Mr. Red, a complexion of heat and of burn. You crooked, collapsed lip can't even discern. Poor toasted bastard. It's Florida worth it. It's nicely done. I enjoyed this. Nice job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
I'm going with the finger angle that you picked up on, Laurent, because they do look like fingers, and it does kind of hit on that notion of counting off the anger on your hand, on the fingers of your hand, going through each one. That thought of you slow, you so shut your ignorant pie hole. Then the thought of Mr. Pink with the face that's going to like this thing. So it kind of hits on the angle of knocking off one little tidbit to a rotten day, one piece at a time, and then the angle to the thought in the back end, though I'd buy the warranty, kind of hits at the notion, yeah, this day really sucks. I should have had some insurance.
I like that. Cool comment. You know, for some reason, until you guys said something, I didn't see it as fingers, but I guess, yeah, that would make sense. I saw it as popsicle stick art. But I like that she takes us through the different characters and this person having that attitude. And I could definitely see it like an idea of somebody having an attitude towards themselves, a disappointment in themselves. Hey, Mr. Red, a complexion of heat and of burn, your crooked, collapsed lips can't even discern. Poor toasted bastard, was Florida worth it? There's a real bite to this, a great sense of a dark, twisted humor. What you say, Sir Gray, shocked and surprised, try as you might, even your own shit, no one denies. All the way through, character after character, you know, feeling like somebody like berating themselves and, you know, what they have to say, you know, to, you know, so excellent imagery and very well done. All right, Rex.
Yeah, I got it. I put it in the wrong space.
I know. Well, what do you got for us next?
Happy New Year by Eric Swenson.
And we have a SoundCloud for that. So, here we go.
Happy New Year. Jumping Jack Flash, Great Balls of Fire, Jabberwocky of Chinese New Year Jockeys, Crazy Hazy Firecracker Smoke Smudges, Fuzzy Remembrance Polka Dots Non Sequiturs, Online Spaceship Teaching English Jettisons, Stargate Chime Opens Communication, China Online at the Press of a Button, Smiley Face East Greets Composed West, Keenness to Crinkle Cut Chip and Dip Grammar Inspires, Teacher, We Celebrate Year of the Wabbit, Smiley Face Beans Promise, Quick Google on the Side, Year of the Rabbit Symbolizes Longevity and Good Fortune, Furry Cuddly Bunnies Hoppity Hop Across the Screen, No Highbrow Buddy Boy The Student, Jumping Jack Flash, Jabberwocky of Chinese New Year Jockeys, Cogs, Pulleys and Ratchets Scratch a Promising Canvas Surface, Lowbrow Country Bumpkin Wants to Speak Art, No Teacher, Tell Me About Crazy LA Art, Girl with a Pearl Earring I Ponder, Do Re Pam, Double Whammy, Jabberwockies, Lowbrow Art Presented to Wonder, Ponder On, Tongue in Cheek, Teacher, Born in the Year of the Rat, Little Old Chinese Lady Beamed Moonshine Years Ago When She Heard This, You Be Happy to Be a Rat, Rats Always in Full Barns, They Leave Sinking Ships, Ad Lib Celebration of Quirky Crazy Art, Starship Online Teaching Captain Spock Goes For Boldly, Banter Canter Adroit Steeplechase, 30 Minute Skydive Free Fall, Happy Heart Country Bumpkin Beams Love of Art.
Great read and write, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's kind of a full dip notion into a West Coast thought. You got a little bit of the San Francisco with the Chinese New Year. You've got music, film, cartoons, you've got TV with the thought of Spock and Stargate. So he's dipping into a whole lot, and it's funny because you got a smiley face East greets composed West, keenness to crinkle cut, chip and dip, grammar inspired. And then, Chicha, we celebrate year after what it. So he's got a little bit of Elmer Fudd notion. But he even takes a bash at himself, calling him a lowbrow country bumpkin wants to be art. Where better to go? You got to hit the L.A. art scene. A girl with a pearl earring, I ponder. Do-Ray Pam, double whamming, Jabberwocky's lowbrow art presented to wonder, ponder on. So the idea of it might be lowbrow, but he's also dropping himself as the country bumpkin, loving that idea in the art itself. Nicely done, Eric. Something a little bit different.
It was a little bit different. It was great fun. And I like that you picked up on a lot of the West Coast vibe, which is the West Coast of the United States was where lowbrow art originally came from. So very cool observation. And Lauren, your thoughts?
Yeah. It's time of the night. After I take my pills, my thoughts are a little fuzzy. So all I'm going to say is that anyone who can bring in Mick Jagger, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Lewis Carroll, the first three lines of their poems got my vote.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yes, definitely. I have to agree. I really like how this is a tribute to the artwork and shows, as Rex was saying, appreciation for it. And yes, definitely. I mean, you got in that first stanza, you not only got the Jabberwocky, you got Jumping Jack Flash, all kinds of fun stuff. I really cracked up. The part that really cracked me up was, Teacher, we celebrate Year of the Wabbit. Oh, man. I love that he decided to go with the whole Elmer Fudd thing. I really like no highbrow buddy boy, this student, Jumping Jack Flash, Jabberwocky of Chinese New Year jockeys, cogs, pulleys, and ratchets, scratch a prompt and canvas surface, lowbrow country bumpkin wants to speak art. I love how he had fun with words and the fun with the idea of the simple man's art, you know. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
The Failed Aspirant by G.A. Grimm. You got a sound card?
All right, here we go.
The Failed Aspirant by G.A. Grimm. I am no knight. I possess no shield, only weapons, a legacy from my parents. After all, what defends against hunger? Guards against neglect, the intangible foes of my youth. No, brandishing the dual blades, mistrust and scorn, it is the quiet violence with which I waged battle. I came to wield them well. So the legendary heroes I read about and longed to be would remain fantasy. In my world, there are no shining saviors. I lived, dreams died. Time passed. I came to be loved by a few, fools all. Each time it was professed, they were abandoned. Mistrust would not be sheathed, yet they did not deserve the stinging cut of scorn. So I fled. This repeats itself until I met her. When it came time to flee, as it always did, she proved stubborn and far faster. My damsel, the sacred ink given form, though it is I who was in distress and saved.
Wonderful read and write, George. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated, and I'm glad you were inspired. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Hey, just say what a pleasure it is to hear the voice of a young poet instead of the hoary mumblings of some of us who've been around the pole. This brought a real smile to my face. It's kind of a gentle self-deprecation. All through this, I am no knight, I possess no shield, only weapons and legacy from my parents. For all what defends against hunger, guards against neglect, the intangible foes of my youth. you know, he speaks of the quiet violence, the dual blades
yeah.
of distress and scorn. And as he grows older, his dreams die, even as he lives. And he came to be poorly loved by a few and fled it, and then met that one woman who proved stubborn and far faster, a damsel of sacred ink given form. And the knight did not save the lady saved the knight. I really, really thought this was a charming piece. I loved it.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Me too. Great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
I got to walk that same way, especially with that note, a legacy from my parents. Ah, nice touch there, mistrust and scorn. You don't believe in that which you can't physically hold and control yourself. That's why mistrust and scorn walk that way. And then I thought of a time passed. I came to be loved by a few fools all, and then abandoning them because of the thought fear lingers longest, even when you've got people saying they love you. It's nah, this ain't walking that way because I know how that goes. But the back end, like Laurent said, this does walk a different angle. Obviously, she saw something in him that turned the table and kept him around longer. And that note to a damsel rescuing the knight, so to speak, or offering up, I am no knight, walks a different tone, a little bit flavorful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There is a heartfelt sadness to this one. And yet at the same time, a wonderful sense of hope, and that speaking on the idea of that damsel that saves the knight rather than the other way around and saves him through her stubbornness and through her love. And this does have that solemn feel in the beginning of someone who, as it says, brandishing the dual blades, mistrust and scorn. It is the quiet violence with which I battle. I came to wield them well. And I really like those lines because it speaks on how abuse of any kind can affect a child into their adulthood and make it, you know, extremely difficult for them to have relationships because of a lack of trust in their life. So excellent write and very well done. And I'm not going to try to cram another one in because next week I got carryovers from various shows that I'll be putting up, plus maybe some open poetry depending on how much we have. But make sure everyone to join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. Saturday, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, we have Part Sinner, Part Saint. Just make sure to check out all the poetry contests and topic boards put up by our late night poet hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. I know I, for one, have like four contests up, so make sure to run over to my page when you get a chance and to hell, check all four of them out. And Rex, I know you are running a contest for Sunday's Rhythm and Rhyme show as always, so what do you got for us?
Burt Bacharach, since he recently passed at the age of 94. Got a number of tunes up to play with, or you can dip into his vast repertoire, since he has been running since, I think his first recording was 1959.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Awesome. I'm looking forward to that. Very cool. And thank
hey, Rex,
you, as always. Rex.
Yeah. If you ever do need a band for Sunday night, you should check out a Finnish group called Nightwish.
Nightwish?
I'll Nightwish.
Write it down.
I'd write for
cool.
that.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll go check it out.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you, as always, Rex, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you, Lawrence, for calling in. Thank you to Stelina, Ben, Matt29, and I feel like I'm forgetting somebody that was also, Stilltree. Thank you to all of them for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who's listening while we're on live or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And great poetry. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night, people.